Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Brainstorm Brewery. It's your favorite podcast. Back this time, not set reviewing and not at 2 a.m. or whatever it was last week when we did the set review. So that means we might get this one in before DJ's bedtime.
What? Is that a thing?
I mean, no. That was a thing last week.
Well, it was not a thing.
But DJ was like, it's 12:30. Why you gotta talk so much?
No, because we were supposed to get on at like 10, and then we ended up getting on at like 4 in the morning or something like that, and it was ridiculous.
Uh-huh. So would you say it was past your bedtime?
I don't have a bedtime, but I have a time that I like to go to bed at a reasonable hour.
That would be a bedtime, DJ.
Yeah.
I don't have a bedtime per se. I just have like a time. I like to go to bed
every night.
Sorry that anyways. I have a normal sleep schedule.
I'm sorry you have a normal sleep schedule too, because
yeah, I agree.
You know who doesn't have a normal sleep schedule? Corbin's kid. That's why Corbin's late to record every week.
Anyway, so the other voice you heard in there, that's Eric. Welcome back. Patreon guest coming to hang out with us on the podcast again. What's up, man?
It's a beautiful night. So I'm actually home this night instead of back in a hotel somewhere.
Yes.
It makes for a difference.
It does make a difference. I'm enjoying I'm at home for a month without any GPs to go to, and I'm definitely enjoying actually having more than a few days at once in my own bed.
So, yep, I got my beer at home, so I'm happy.
So, are you going to Toronto, Corbin?
No, I am not. I'm going to Seattle that weekend, actually. For a bachelor party for a friend. So I will be traveling, but not to the GP. Going to the home of magic, that's all. And hopefully doing no magic-related things for the weekend.
Is anybody going to Vegas?
That's the plan.
I am still undecided on Vegas.
I'm going to Vegas. Joey D twisted my arm, and I think the EDH rec crew wants to hang out. So I'm like, you know what? I got enough reasons to go to Vegas, even though I was like, I was just there. I feel like going to Vegas every year is a bit much, but I think it'll be worth it.
I agree. And I've basically been every year now for like the past 3 years or whatever, and it does feel like a bit much.
But whatever.
So
right? I might end up working it. If I end up working it, I'll probably go.
I'd like to work a day or two and subsidize the trip.
So what's the deal, DJ? Are you just like full-time 95 MTG shill now?
I'm not full-time, but I'm working Toronto, so.
Nice.
That's a good event.
DJ, moving on up in the world. Are you buying or just working the front of the booth?
Mostly the front of the booth, but a little bit of buying.
Sort of. How was so you did Hartford, right?
Yes.
How was that? Because that GP seemed – yeah, that GP seemed pretty busy.
It was really good. That was East Coast GPs are great, and then Modern GPs are great, and Hartford was an East Coast GP, and they've never had one in Connecticut before, so it was just sort of a perfect storm. And
that was the first GP in Connecticut?
Yes.
I didn't realize that. It was literally the perfect storm. There was an ice storm.
Yeah, and your flight got canceled, which was hilarious.
My flights got wrecked. I got flights canceled coming in. I got flights leaving out that were delayed, and then this is the worst. I sprinted 20 gates in Dallas to try to make a connection that I originally had 3 hours to make. I missed the door closing by 2 minutes, and I'm sitting there panting, just dying after running 20 gates with bags on my shoulders. And I'm like, how long did I miss it by? And they're like, you missed it by 2 minutes, sir. And I'm like, oh my god. And then like I look at my phone, I'm like, it shows the flight left 7 minutes early. I just about lost it.
I would be getting some free stuff off of them for that.
Yeah, but, it was not a good day. That's the downside of traveling
with
GPs.
Hartford was a great GP. I know you didn't really enjoy it very much, but our Airbnb was inside of an ice cream shop.
That's pretty legit.
Yeah, so it was like this house that was built in the early 1800s, and it was attached to a sort of old school mom and pop ice cream store that only took cash, and our living room smelled like waffle cone in the evening, so that was great.
I don't think you were at an Airbnb. I think you slept behind a counter at an ice cream.
Yeah. Well, honestly, what I'm most jealous of there is that my hotel was cheap and close to the convention center, but there was like no CVS to go to. The only Starbucks was inside the convention center, so it wasn't a good one. Like, it wasn't a real Starbucks. There was no food to go get.
Oh, the food situation was miserable. Yeah.
Downtown Hartford just sucks.
The cops were on patrol in that convention center, and it was awful.
Because you couldn't bring in outside food?
Yeah, they wouldn't let us bring in any food, even though we were obviously staff, and we had obviously, like, paid a significant amount of money to be at that event, and so we had to, like, take rotating trips and, like, smuggle food inside, and it was a ridiculous situation.
Dude, I'm told the trick is you have to say it's part of your contract.
That would have been a good idea. I was not in charge of the food situation, so I did not get to try that.
Corbin giving you important information weeks after it's too late, much like all his picks of the week.
Hey, this was passed on to me after it goes up. Yeah, this was passed on to me. I've not had to deal with it. I usually can just sneak food in my laptop bag or whatever. But I usually like to go to a CVS or Walgreens or something. You're going to put Buffalo Wild Wings
in your laptop bag?
Dude, I never get EP dubs on trips. It's always just like, it's either crab convention center food or it's the McDonald's next door to it or whatever. And I get like one good meal a weekend on Saturday night.
Yep.
Traveling for events loses its shine very quickly.
But I don't know why they... I can assume why they capped the main event. I'm assuming it was just because of logistical reasons. But like,
they couldn't get any more space. Yes, I mean, they said that they couldn't get any more space.
Like, I don't understand why we didn't just go next door and kick all the kids out, because there was like some dino time travel event, which seemed pretty cool.
You think that's how it works? You think you just kick out other shows that have also paid to be there? That's how it works?
Well, yeah, we can overpower them.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. That's good feedback. You should pass it on to CFB events. Just let them know the next time that they run out of space and can't secure more space, just kick the kids and the dinosaurs out.
In their defense, fuck a bunch of dinosaurs. Can we?
The dinosaur thing did look kind of cool for what it's worth. I wish I had got a chance to go in there. Everybody loves dinosaurs, right? It's like big animatronic dinosaurs and stuff.
Yeah.
Really, Jason? You're the one kid who didn't love dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs are fine.
Too cool for him. He was a hipster from when he was like 7.
He was, yeah. He was like, oh, you have a dinosaur volcano.
I'm a hipster because I don't like shit like Buffalo Wild Wings and Big Bang Theory. You're like making it out like I'm some curmudgeon when you're just so basic.
You are a curmudgeon.
You're so basic. Everybody looks like a curmudgeon compared to you.
What did you name your daughter? Did you name your daughter not only one of the most popular baby names of 2016, but also the same thing that everybody in the magic community names their daughter, and you're going to call me basic?
Oof.
You're gonna call me. You're gonna call me hipster when I name my daughter the most popular baby name of 2016. Pick a fucking lane and stick to it, man.
You're the one calling basic, man. You're the one calling basic.
Well, you are basic. You live your life basic. My daughter's gonna live her life basic. I don't want her cool. I don't want her a nerd, dude. If she's a nerd, she's gonna have sex with nerds, and their cocks are way too big. I don't want her. I don't want that in her life.
Oh.
I don't even know how to possibly disentangle what you just said and try to make it approach reality.
Oh boy.
I don't want a nerdy daughter. I want her to be a cheerleader. I want her to be the second fattest cheerleader.
That's the episode title right there.
Right? Like, she's not the fattest cheerleader, because everyone feels real sorry for the fattest cheerleader. Like, she takes the guy with Down syndrome to prom, and they get prom king and queen, but, like, it's kind of bullying a little bit. But the second fattest cheerleader, she gets to go to like all the cool cheerleader stuff with the rest of them, because she makes them all look thin and attractive by being in the picture with them, you know. And then she goes to college and loses some weight and gets some self-confidence and like gets a PhD. That's the track she's on. She doesn't know it yet because she's 2, but that's the plan. So you know, I can't have her going down some nerdy path. So I'm going to name her Liliana so she rebels, like some sort of Family Ties shit, right? I want her to be...
Seems like you've really thought this out.
Yeah, this...
You guys don't have really a plan. I have a plan for my kid. You don't have a plan?
There's a lot of deep thought.
No, my Corbin has a plan. We went NBA, over it. Obviously. Corbin's plan is to, like, hold his kid in the shower in college.
My kid's going to play in the NBA. He can already dribble like a boss. That's clearly how it works.
Yeah, on his shirt.
Wait, that was the burn. A 2-year-old is messy when they eat.
Yeah, a 2-year-old Corbin. Jesus Christ, your kid is still messy. My daughter uses a fork and a knife and a napkin, and she daintily dabs the corners of her mouth.
I see. Okay, I will keep that in mind.
She's 2, not 19 months. Come on.
Well, my kid's not actually 2 yet. He's close. He's close.
Maybe he'll stop drooling all the time.
Maybe he'll go to bed when you want him to
Liliana
go to bed.
Liliana's starting to get adult teeth. She, like, her baby teeth are falling out. She's getting like real big incisors, and she doesn't know what to do. She's like, I'm teething,
Papa. Don't your baby teeth Is that your baby teeth fall out when you're 10?
I don't know. What, this is my first kid. What do I look like, a doctor? I don't know.
You know, it doesn't bother me that you say this stuff. It bothers me that I know you're going to tell your daughter this stuff. She's like 10 years old, and you'll be like, okay, honey, you can do whatever you want as long as you're the second fattest cheerleader.
She doesn't have to be the second
fattest. Don't you dare eat too much.
She could be the second ugliest, too.
What if she gets to high school and there's just like no fat cheerleader?
Then I'm going to have to... Okay, then I've got a plan for that. Do you want to hear the plan?
Late-term abortion.
I would like to hear your plan.
I'm going to join the PTA, right? And I'm going to make friends with one of the fat moms, and I'm going to, like, start hanging out all the time and then convince her fat daughter that, like, she actually is attractive enough to join the cheerleading squad. It'll be an inspirational story. They'll write blogs about me about how I gave one girl the courage to follow her dreams, and then she'll be the fattest cheerleader.
They have a Hallmark film, and it's...
Yeah. It'll be called The Blind Side 2. The second fattest cheerleader. I think it'll be a real heartwarming story because I look like the good guy here when in reality I'm just serving my 27-point Machiavellian plan to have my daughter get through high school unscathed.
I'm just going to talk about Dominaria now.
Hey, man. So I don't have a rant about that?
By all means, get it out of the way. Tell us about Dominaria pre-release for you.
You put Helm of the Host on a creature, and then you win the game.
Wow. What a rant. You did it.
It's that simple. Pool. There's not too much removal. You basically... I haven't drafted this set yet. I would like to draft it, because I think drafting this set will be interesting. But Sealed was kind of a mess. And
isn't Sealed always a mess in every format ever?
I think so, yeah.
This seemed especially messy.
I cannot recall the last time I've ever heard anybody say anything about Sealed other than Sealed really sucks. I'm sure draft will be great.
I'm interested to draft this set. I think it'll be fun.
I think they don't even bother balancing for Sealed with that, whatever that even
how,
means.
Yeah, how would you
or
do
how
that?
You would even go, but how would you even go? Yeah, exactly, right? I feel like balancing for draft probably hurts the Sealed experience, right? Because they're different things.
Yeah.
But also it doesn't matter because you play Sealed exactly once, and that's at the pre-release.
You play it for
and then
PPGs.
You play team sealed it. You play team sealed at a GP. Almost all of them are team limited. Now they're not all team limited, so you do have to do it sometimes. But like by and large, I would say 98 to 99% of the experience of a new set is not sealed. Because think about the people who play in the four GPs that are limited of the event compared to everyone who went to a pre-release. Compared to everyone who plays the set every week. Like, most people are just not experiencing Sealed. And no one cares at a pre-release.
You look at the PPTQ season, I know the PPTQs here in Michigan, about half of them are limited for this
That's
season.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That is a thing.
And that is
Magic
a major thing.
Like, the Magic
thing.
Online Sealed decks, like the Sealed leagues, fire a lot, too.
I mean, these are all valid points. You're right. It's not that it doesn't matter, but
like
if you're Wizards...
Like, 98% is a strong number, I'd say.
Maybe true. I mean, the PBTQ crowd in comparison to the overall Magic crowd is also not big, right? But I mean, regardless of whatever, you know, number you want to put it at, Sealed just, I'd rather it be balanced for draft than Sealed. And
sure.
I probably is hard to do both.
I don't know how you'd balance it for Sealed.
You don't, yeah, so let's not talk about it.
I don't think that's
well, I mean, it does matter in the sense that, you know, we have the Dominaria pre-release and it was Sealed and that people form their first impressions on it. So, I mean, what did you guys
think
about
the set? I think people form their impressions of card interactions is what happens. Stuff overperforms and stuff underperforms. History of Benalia was a card that we kind of were like, yeah, I don't know if that's $7. And we were wrong. It's 17.
It's get rid of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not proven yet. There's no...
The card is not good.
There's brews around it, but that's not anything guaranteeing.
I just don't think this card's good at all.
All anyone's going to remember is that I called it History of Banality, and I was making a joke about the name of it, but like, if it's a good card, that sound clip is going to haunt me.
Well, the reason
I think Helm
be good
really
is-
overperformed, though, and I think a few other cards like Blackblade Reforged is a lot better limited than I thought it was going to be.
What is Helm of the Host?
Helm of the Host is when you put it on a creature and it makes a copy every combat phase, and the copy sticks around.
Oh, that is cool. That's a powerful effect for sure.
I think everybody assumed the token. Half the people I talked to assumed the token went away because of stuff like Blade of Selves and, you know, Kiki Jiki.
Right.
The token sticks around. So I put it on Shanna, Sisse's Legacy or whatever. It's just like, I have a 1-1, now I have 2-2-2s, now I have 3-3-3.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Just stuff like, anything you put on, a Academy Drake, and they're like, oh, shit, I can't race that. Like, I think it's obviously the EDH crowd was already like, well, that's nuts. The Godot deck wins on turn 4 or whatever. You know, it's good with combat.
How does that go infinite with Godot?
Because Godot creates an additional combat phase when it attacks.
But Godot doesn't untap himself.
The token creates, and that attacks by itself.
And then the next token comes in, the next token comes in.
Oh, yep, I see.
He doesn't untap himself because he's not a samurai. You are correct.
Yeah.
You don't attack with all of them. You just attack with an infinite stream of them.
Right, yeah.
If they have an indestructible blocker, I guess you put in Argenta Armor or something. I don't really know.
Sure. No, that makes sense now.
But yeah, it doesn't untap all of them, and that would be a lot easier.
I was thinking it was more of like a Hellkite Tyrant or Hellkite Charger thing.
Yeah.
I'm still stuck on History of Banality, man. I guess the reason it could be good is because there are white and or white black decks that it does slot into, and in that sense it might be playable, right? When you have Sky Marcher Ascendant and a whatever, the 2-1 that leaves behind a 1-1.
Like, yeah.
It can do things, and I can see it being good in those decks, but okay. The card itself is just underwhelming to me, but it is a mythic, so we'll see what happens, I guess.
I kinda like the idea of going turn 1 Llanowar Elf, turn 2 Steel Paladin thing, the
Steely Champion.
The 7-6 for 2 mana or whatever elf. That can't be blocked, that guy.
So, something like that, yeah. You were close.
That's pretty close. That's power. That's like next year's card. I don't know if there's enough elves in Standard. We might have to wait till like the block after to give us some more elves, but...
Is it just me, or do we normally know what the next set's name is at this point?
Yes. Here's my take on it. We do usually. I believe that it has to do with whatever the story of Dominaria is, which I have not followed.
Right.
I can only imagine that they're not, because sets are now the way they do it, it's not, you don't know how long you're going to be on a particular world. If you have Dominaria and we don't know if we're going back to Dominaria or whatever, but you still haven't released a name of it, it seems like it's probably tied in with whatever happens, and it would not necessarily make sense to go back to Dominaria, do this huge big thing, and then immediately go somewhere else or whatever, right?
Well,
Who's
the central character? It's a character that controls time, right? So you would think she would be like, "I got the Weatherlight," and then she's probably gonna resurrect the crew or some shit.
I don't know what any of that means.
He's saying that Teferi is gonna like time warp back and bring back Sisse. Or something.
Is Teferi I thought that Joyra was sort of the main character. But anyway, both of them, they're time people, right? Like, doesn't she have his planeswalker spark? I heard somewhere she has like a necklace with his spark, so if he gets it back, he could do some shit. So I can't imagine
story, Teferi is not a planeswalker, but they just did some like shenanigans and unearthed an artifact, and then Joyra is carrying around Teferi's spark. But Joyra herself is not a time mage. Joyra herself is an artificer.
Oh, she just made time bugs and stuff that did time stuff.
You guys are nerds.
I'm trying to MTG Ryan this a little bit.
Teferi is the actual time mage. Joyra is an artificer. She is a builder of stuff.
You guys are nerds.
Well, that's why her card in Future Sight didn't really make any sense, because it didn't really encapsulate her character.
Well, yeah, she suspended and did stuff with suspend counters.
Right.
Which is time. But she just made gadgets that did that? Okay, well, whatever. I think she'll probably run into Teferi, give him a spark back, and then the next set will be on the plane, but in a different setting at a different time.
Well, the next set's core set, so it can be anywhere they want to put it. So it can be in Dominaria.
The next set that matters. I don't think the core set will be... Will the core set just stand alone, kind of?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because this set is in the same spot that like Dragons of Tarkir or Journey Nyxes or whatever, so the next actual set of releasing is not going to like follow the timeline of the story. It is just a core set with a bunch of random garbage in it, and they can theme it however they want, like Eric said.
Yeah,
but I do assume it'll just be set in Dominaria. Right?
Sure, yeah, probably.
You can.
It will be interesting to see how that core set does, because that is kind of a big deal going back to it.
Well, that they shut themselves off to so many reprint avenues by not doing corsets anymore, and now that those are back, they can really tweak a whole block just by, like, what if we put in Doomblade?
Well, right, especially since they have a shorter lead time on them.
Yeah.
Than they do a normal set. They can actually use them to, you know, quote unquote, fix standard if they put Pithy Needle or whatever effect you think you need.
And you have standard. A playtest group actually building decks that matter, that right. that they can see that what's going to be in problem and fix it.
Theoretically,
yes. And for a worst case scenario, when they weren't doing any of that stuff, it was real annoying having Saheeli combo get and all those bannings. But if that's the worst standard gets,
it was pretty bad. So
yeah. But if that's the worst it gets, like...
It wasn't affinity bad. Level bad, but I do think it was like...
People weren't abandoning the game in droves, though.
I don't know, man. They were abandoning standard bad enough for them to have to make emergency changes.
Well, they complained a lot, but nobody really quit. So I think it'll get better.
Just factually untrue, man.
You don't know that.
I do. Yeah, I talked to everybody.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. I'm pretty sure they did quit. And I would say that Aetherworks Marvel banning... That period, that month of standard, is worse than it was for Cobblade. That's how bad it was.
I disagree on that point. It was bad.
Were you at that GP weekend? Like, it was literal nothing. We had to not like we were not even we didn't even bother taking stats or whatever because it was just all Marvel. It was like six of the top eight. Like, it was worse than Cobblade.
Top eight or something.
No, it wasn't, man.
Sorry, like, there were time periods when it was like six of the top eight and then two mono red decks, but Cobblade was just as bad. But
hey, two minor points. No, A, nobody wants to hear this that's listening to the podcast, and B, none of this matters. So anyway, continue.
All right. C, Cobblade lasted for 9 months or a year or whatever. There's no way Aetherworks Marvel could have made it 6 months in that iteration without people just upright abandoning the game. It was
Cobblade should have been banned a lot sooner, and Cobblade also costed like $600, something insane to build.
Yeah, well, had Jace's in it.
Okay. Okay. I mean that's a separate issue, but yes.
But the price of the dominant deck is a factor in how many people leave the game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just talking about in terms of the gameplay and the lack of diversity. It was there.
If Mark Rosewater or Aaron Forsyth is listening to this, somebody tell us, like, one of you two tell us which one of us is correct.
Yeah. Yeah, please chime in. You know, for people who don't know, old school listeners here, Aaron Forsyth was once interviewed by this podcast.
Because he said something about Fetchlands and everyone was like,
he did. Ooh. Yeah, do you think they'd ever let him come back on this cast? I mean, they got burned by him being on, not because of being on our podcast or whatever, but yeah, whatever it was he said about Fetchlands in like 2014 or whatever, was quoted for years and held against them.
It was super vague too. Yeah.
It was something like, we know people, I don't remember the exact quote, right? But it was something like, we know people want these. We're listening to them. We hear you. We're going to, you know, it essentially led people to believe that it was right around the corner.
Right.
And then it was not for years. I mean, it was literally Modern Masters 2017 before you got the Fetchland reprints, which is just insane. So, yeah, I think I feel like they probably are a lot tighter these days on the kind of information or interviews like that they let get out, which is too bad because it was fun.
He can come on, but he can only talk about 80s movies. That would be fine.
Yeah, it would be great, though. It would be great. So we'll see. If you're a Wizards employee listening to this, let us interview you. Please. What could go wrong? All right, let's break some bulk.
Breaking bulk time. Breaking bulk time. Break.
Oh, yeah, breaking bulk. There's so much good stuff.
It's a pick. Breaking bulk. The end.
Woo! Eric, are you participating in this?
Are
you
ready? I am participating in Breaking Bulk.
Nerd. All right, let the guests go first.
From Dark Ascension.
Blue Common from Dark Ascension, Thought Scour.
Nope.
Artful Dodge.
Yep.
Nope.
What?
Stormbound Geist.
Stormbound Geist.
Boom. Oh, good one.
That card's a house is, in the mono blue Delvermere.
It's yeah. It's a house in anything Pauper, which is crazy. Yes. Anything blue Pauper has it. And it's Undying, so you're not going to reprint it anytime, unless like Undying is a core mechanic for the next core set. But it's not something you're going to see
in Commander product. You don't worry about reprint risk with your break in bulk, right? This is just a card. You got it in bulk, pull it out, don't bulk
it. Pull it out and dump it. So.
Yeah, I mean, and it's actually, this is a good pick too, because it just spiked very recently, yep. And it was nothing up. Forever, but right it's almost a dollar now.
Okay. Almost a dollar!
And Card Kingdom had it on its buy list there about a couple weeks ago at 40 cents. It's now, they got it down to 7 cents, so they must have gotten enough of them, but,
yeah,
you know.
No, that's really good, though, because this is one of those cards that, you know, even, and I've usually picked down to nickels, but this card wasn't even buy listable for however many years of its existence.
Yeah, I've picked these for a while, but I didn't buy list them out. I just hoarded them because every 3 or 4 months or so, I'd get a request for 4 of them for a janky Pauper deck or whatever. So
yeah,
it's just a card I picked, but didn't buy list out. And now I'm probably going to make a bunch
Pauper. We've said it before, man. I'm so happy that Pauper is doing well because it is just, it is the best thing to happen to bulk. Since I've started playing the game, maybe like
it did for bulk commons what EDH did for bulk rares.
That's yes, a fair assessment.
But not even yeah, I mean like that's true. And also it just took cards that because we've talked about how especially in the big paradigm shift for Wizards was probably like 5-6 years ago or whatever when we were after the player boom that had originally drove prices on a bunch of older stuff and they kind of got into this okay, now we just need to reprint everything mode, probably because Hearthstone got created. It was you have to start giving players what they want, and they just started hitting every $2-3 uncommon from the past 10 years, and it's what caused the drop in the prices of bulk, in my opinion, right? We don't necessarily have high-level data on that, but you can either assume that people just stopped wanting Magic cards, or that the cards they wanted just became
or there's just so
money.
Much more bulk, because they printed more of Rivals of Ixalan than they did every set between Visions and, like...
Yeah, it's more of the fact that recent sets were overprinted, not overprinted, but printed to the point where, like...
Printed to demand, which is higher.
Yeah, exactly. Because pre, like, RTR or whatever, you could offer on bulk, and you knew that all the bulk you were getting was, like, from a certain time period. Because you can still buy and sell bulk, and if you, like, sell it to dealers or whatever, if you specify, hey, all of this bulk is pre-RTR, you will still get a premium over bulk that's post-RTR. So it's more of just the time period and how much product is out there, as opposed to just like reprint policies or whatever.
Reprint is honestly a big part of it though, because let's look, I mean, I'm looking at RTR right now and something like Sphere of Safety is a dollar. And that card would have been the sweet $3 pick from however long ago, but it got reprinted. Vandal Blast would be $5, except it got reprinted. Like it's not just, yes, they print more of it, but it's also just that there are so many avenues with the Commander decks and everything else to reprint stuff, so you have a bunch of dollar picks or 50-cent picks instead of $3 or $4 picks, right? Long gone are the days of getting boxes of Lorwyn and pulling out a bunch of $4 or $5 uncommons in it because they just reprint cards more now.
Yeah.
And they tactically reprint this stuff. So when we talk about the price of bulk dropping, because for the longest time we could pay $5 on bulk and know we'd always make our money back. And now bulk's down to like $2 or $3 a thousand. And yes, it is all of these things you're talking about, but it's also just the fact that even when you hit unpicked bulk from X set, it's just not going to be worth as much money now. The same cards are just worth less money because of all the reprints. So what Pauper is doing is it's driving them back up. You know, Moldrifter is actually just like the perfect example because there was a time for some number of years after that card was printed, it was $2, right? It was a great pick. And then they just... But it was an awesome card, so they just put it in this supplementary set, and then this one, and then this one. And before you know it, Moldrifter's a quarter and barely worth picking anymore. Now it's $2 again, thanks to Pauper. Like, Pauper has just saved picking bulk. It really puts some of the fun back into it. It makes it feel less like a grind, because there's nothing wrong with grinding through thousands and thousands of cards of bulk and pulling out everything a quarter and making money on it. But it's a lot less fun than your good hits being $3 and knowing that, hey, this one card I just pulled bought me, you know, an energy drink or whatever, right?
Oh boy, an energy drink.
What? This is a guy who picks 4-cent right. cards all day. What?
This is a guy that told us to sort our basic lands. He's like, oh boy, $3.
I'm just saying energy drinks are a waste. It's $3 for like a shitty beverage you can just like drink anything else.
Okay, man. Whatever you want your $3 to go to,
whatever $3 you give your coffee, you give your wife to make her sort your bulk for hours.
Exactly. Yeah, that's better
than me. I like to get Red Bulls in the afternoon, so that was the first thing that came to my mind. But feel free to insert whatever $3 thing you enjoy. Jesus.
Like another 1,000 bulk commons?
Yes. If you're paying $3 on bulk commons, you're overpaying, but sure.
No, you're not.
Okay. You can get them for two.
Not around here anymore.
Sucks to be you. You probably drove yourself out of the market. Like, you just kept... They bought it all.
I mean, everyone sold it to you. Effectively, yeah.
When I live within a 2 mile radius of TCG player, I wonder why I can't get bulk as an independent dealer.
Weird. I'd tell you some of my bulk, but all the bulk I haven't gone through is like Legends, and I just don't even care to go through it. I'm just going to let it sit in the corner.
Yeah, it's like everything's $3.
Well, and someone asked me this recently at the store. They were like, I have some old reserve list stuff. Legend stuff. What should I do with it?
Never sell it.
And that's a really hard question, right? Because if you have any, because this particular person was like, you know, I'm thinking about buying X and X or whatever that I want. And it's hard to say because if you have such and such Legends reserve list card, it could get bought out tomorrow and then you'll feel done for selling it. But it also might just sit there for 2 years and then get bought out. Like, you know it's not going to go down, but you don't know when it's going to go up, and there is an opportunity cost to holding it.
Just holding it and doing nothing with it. If you want to get a fridge, just get the fridge. Right. The ice maker won't work, and you'll be like, wow, those cards went to 100. But still, like, just do what you want with your money.
Good throwback. So, yeah, that's exactly what I told him. I said, I mean, this is just the reality, is that they are going to go up at some point, and maybe you get lucky and they go up immediately or soon or whatever, but maybe you don't, and you may, like, it is what it is.
They're more than they should be.
You just have to make a choice.
So how much more than they should be before you're like, all right, I accept this, you know, amount.
Right.
If it's exactly more than it should be already, then just take the win.
Well, I've been going through the same thing where I have like a pile of the card recall from Legends behind me or whatever, right? And I have whatever X named 3-color Legend that isn't played in anything, but it's on the reserve list. And it's just like, I could get $50 from Card Kingdom for this card that should not be worth a dollar. But I also just know it's going to go up again.
Yeah, like, I also sold my Aiden Oakenshield for $35 thinking I was slick, so.
Right, exactly. It's just so, it's so hard. All right, well, I'll jump in next on this. Speaking of Return to Ravnica, I have a Return to Ravnica red common. Should be easy.
Electricery.
Yep, it is electricery. Didn't think it'd be too hard. Return to Ravnica, for what it's worth, has actually turned out to be pretty decent for bulk. Obviously, I mentioned Vandal Blast and Sphere of Safety earlier. But also the Dragon Token, the 6/6 Dragon Token from Uvara Hellkite, yep, and Return to Ravnica is $3.
Yeah, because so. Uvara Hellkite's expensive.
Yeah, card's great.
And it's the only 6/6 dragon, I think, ever, right?
It got reprinted, right?
Uvara deck.
But did it come with a token?
Yes.
Yeah, the token probably has something cool on the back. So,
well, like, the token was like $3 or $4, but now it's just like slightly less because of the reprint. But it's been long enough since the reprint that it's just climbed back up.
Here's some trivia. What's on the back of the 6/6 dragon token from the commander deck? Because they print them double-sided.
A 0/1 plant.
Really?
I have no idea.
You're guessing?
I assumed you knew.
What deck was it in?
I want to say Duretti, but I feel like I'm wrong.
It was in the Commander 2016, did you say?
No, it was earlier than that.
I'm not going to know. I'll let you guess.
I'll give up. I can't guess it.
Uvara Hellkite was Commander 2017, so it was probably the...
So it was in the Dragon deck.
Wasn't it in another Commander deck before this?
No.
Really?
It was 2017, so it was in the Dragon deck. So I guess the back is probably the Cat Dragon or something. I don't know. I probably have it on my desk.
No, the Cat Dragon was the green-white deck, right?
No, the Cat Dragon is Jund.
No, it was the Jund thing.
It's Wessatora.
Oh, okay.
Wessatora. Oh, okay, sure. So, whatever.
I don't ever look at the individual commander sets. Like, I know all the cards or whatever, but I'm just clueless as to what's in which one. Well, I never really come across them sealed, so...
Yeah, I just get a pile of them.
It doesn't come up very often.
I sort them all together. I don't sort them by deck.
Knowing which cards are in which deck allows you to buy certain decks when they
But
are
I just
online.
Look that up on my phone when I have the opportunity to buy, so...
Comment on your phone instead of like knowing them, because that like it's what's the point of knowing them if you can just look it all up.
I pull up the deck list. What are you talking about?
the difference in scale here is what matters, right? It's a lot easier to look up what was an X Commander deck. But a bigger question, do you actually have the opportunity to buy them sealed for cheap very often?
Yeah.
I almost never have these come up.
Yeah, because Targets and what happened was all Toys R Us pulled the distributor pulled all their stuff out of Toys R Us. So they're getting restocks on Target stores and Walmarts and stuff like that. So like random old stuff that was in like a dusty bin in the corner of a Toys R Us store is now like getting on shelves of places where people might actually buy it.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. But another factor is like when a card jumps, if it is in a sealed product, it is at your advantage to know which deck that card is in before everybody else, because there could be a run on that deck. So the most recent example of this is Command Beacon. Do you guys know what deck Command Beacon is in?
Yeah, it was in the blue-green one, the Azuri one.
Exactly. And so
it's in the Commander deck.
It's in the it's in the blue-green Azuri deck. And so when that card jumped because of Muldrotha, Command Beacon went to like $30-something or whatever ridiculous.
And it was a $35 deck.
Yeah, you could go on eBay and buy a bunch of Azuri decks for like $35 or $40, and then.
But we're talking literal seconds to figure out which deck it was in.
That's why we're talking. You don't have to know it off the top of your head. Yeah. Albert Einstein said, "Don't ever know anything that you could look up or something like that." I don't know the quote. I could look the quote up if you want. The point is, The point is. Don't ever memorize anything you could look up in a book. That's what he said. And he was a smart guy. And he won a Nobel Prize.
Most of my favorite quotes come from Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Well, we didn't all read Animorphs, so I don't...
Everyone likes Animorphs. Also, that was a movie, man. That was a movie. You should have seen it.
Animorphs was a movie?
No, it was a TV show.
It was called Twilight, Corbin. Stop pretending that Twilight was in the Animorphs universe. But the dude, he turned into a dog, probably.
It'd be so much better if it was. Also, the worm token from Advent of the Worm is worth $1 from Return to Ravnica. So there you go.
Can I do my breaking bolt? Because this segment is taking a half hour.
Yeah, you can, I guess.
Okay. When Eric said a blue Dark Ascension card, I almost pooped my pants because I have a blue Dark Ascension uncommon.
Dark Ascension.
Secrets of the Past?
No, you stupid idiot. It's Secrets of
Isn't
the Dead.
Isn't it Secrets of the Dead? Yeah.
You moron.
Sure.
Yeah, you dumb.
Yeah, Muldrotha, it turns out.
You should feel so embarrassed.
This is going to be a real good Muldrotha card. The foils are currently...
All right, so what does Secrets of the Dead do?
Sold out at a buck. Whenever you cast a spell from your graveyard, draw a card.
Yep.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, also, I remember that. It was pretty fun.
Probably going to go up, and I love that card so much.
Yeah, well, EDH Rec started scraping decks. We got about 20 Muldrotha decks in the database, and it's looking... It's shaping up. People are kind of building how they're going to build. We're starting to see some common themes like Pernicious Deed. We're seeing those Command Beacons. And we're starting to see the emergence of some cards that were sort of 1v1 cards that never really got played in multiplayer. Like Caustic Caterpillar. That's starting to rear its little caterpillar head. So
that card's sweet.
Sack outlets are going to be good. Stuff like Strip Mine is going to be good. Like, obviously, like the big money, like Command Beacon and Lion's Eye Diamond. But, like, no one's going to build. Most people are going to buy an $8 Muldrotha, and they're not going to spend $490 on an LED or whatever. They're
finally
just
what I decided. Yeah, finally, what pushed me over the edge to buy an LED was his $8 Commander.
Yep.
River
exactly.
Kelpie has been a pet card of mine for, like, 4 or 5 years, and I'm so glad that it might finally pop.
Well, Kelpie's what, so $3
ever read
right
that
now?
Card ever. Every time I played that card in Marchesa, they ask to read it, and then they read all of its abilities, and their draw drops.
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever a card enters the battlefield from your graveyard, you draw a card.
No,
and,
whatever,
no,
any
and.
whatever river kelpie or any permanent is put into any play from any graveyard, draw any card. And then whatever any spell is played from a graveyard, draw a card, and it has persist.
And it has persist, so it triggers itself when it dies. It's amazing.
I remember playing with that when I first started playing Magic.
Yeah. So great. If they're going off with Moldrotha, hey, you draw a bunch of cards. If somebody else is doing degenerate flashback things, you draw cards. If somebody has a bunch of like living death effects, you draw a shit ton of cards. The card is great, and it's never had like a super big home until now. I played it in Marchesa, but that's just me.
So Jason, is Secrets of the Dead, I mean, the market price on it is 13 cents. Is this, you, I mean, is this, when you say breaking bulk, in this case, do you mean it's worth pulling back it's getting played, but it may not be a thing where you want to buy list it tomorrow? Is that what you're
no,
saying?
No, you wait on this, because people are just starting to figure out their Moldrotha decks. We have 20 decks in the database. That means like 20 people in the on the planet Earth have written down their Moldrotha deck somewhere where it can be scraped. Like, there's no consensus yet. The consensus is forming, but what we're seeing is River Kelpie / Secrets of the Dead effects, sac effects like Ashnod's Altar, sac effects like Caustic Caterpillar, dumb loopy stuff like Strip Mine, you know, and like sick value stuff like World Shaper. That's what's starting to be the consensus. So when you start to... this is the most exciting time, because if this were modern, everyone would have figured their stuff out by now. But for EDH, people are going to wait till they get a physical Moldrotha in their hand. Then they're going to put the Moldrotha on their mat, and they're like, all right, Sol Ring, I need 98 more cards. And that's what happens. We have a month until Moldrotha stuff starts to pop. We really do. We have so much time.
Explain to people, too, who might not know, the way EDH Rec works, it scrapes data from multiple sites, right? And then you can look at the commander and see the most common cards, right?
Yeah, it's like, well, 39% of the decks so far have a Caustic Caterpillar. And that's 20 decks, but 39% of 20 decks says, hey, that's probably a card. And that was a 1v1 card before. That wasn't really a multiplayer card before, but all of a sudden we're starting to say, hey.
I see it in Marin.
Most Marin decks play that card.
But that was basically it. Steal a Primordial. Stuff like Mystic Remora, where you just draw a bunch of cards, don't pay it, and then just
and you don't care if it dies,
Mystic Remora is like $2 right now. I think that's a... I was pulling those for dimes in my LGS. I pulled like a stack of like 100 of them for dimes a couple EDH years ago, and I just sat on them, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah, EDH Rec really does do, at the risk of complimenting Jason's team here.
Well, I had nothing to do with the EDH Rec side of it. So like all the data, all the scraping, all the coding, that I have nothing to do with. I don't know. That's all magic to me. I was hired to create the article side of it. That's what I'm good at. But all the other stuff, that's wizardry. So like I don't get any credit for EDH Rec being a great site before I came along, because I did nothing, you know, but add additional value. So everything Dawn's doing and all the coding team, it's amazing. And
I mean, the site really does, it does a great job of giving you access to something that has never been, you know, whenever a card would come out in the past, and it almost makes me like, I don't know if cringe-worthy is the right word, but there have been cards. I think the Primordial cycle from whatever set it was, Luminate Primordial, Sepulchral Primordial, Silver Primordial obviously got banned, but we all looked at those and we were like, these are great in EDH. Everyone's going to play them forever. Get your copies. And like the only one that was ever worth any money was Silver Primordial, and then it got banned, and the others are just unplayable. I mean, Sepulchral Primordial gets played, son. But it's they're 19 cents, except maybe for Sepulchral Primordial. But like Luminate Primordial and Molten Primordial, they're just worthless. But that's just because we were just idiots who looked at it and said, hey, this has each player on it, so it must be good in Commander. But what EDH Rec does now is it allows us to go from the level of people like us.
You can type in Luminate Primordial, know it all, and
we actually get data to support things now.
Luminate Primordial is played in 2,321 decks.
In the world.
In the total. And you compare that to something like Swiftfoot Boots, which is played in 69,636 decks.
Yeah.
So that's... Swiftfoot Boots is played in 300 times more decks than Luminate Primordial. So you can say, these will be an EDH staple. It's a Source Plowshares on a stick. Well, 2,000 people agree with you, but 300 times as many people want to run Swiftfoot Boots. So something like that.
So it's just really cool to have that.
Is a term that has a very specific meaning.
Right. It's just very cool to have data to finally back these things up.
Because even if the data from a quantitative standpoint was like, well, 300 times as much, shouldn't the price be blah, blah, blah? It's qualitatively, you can be like, well, this is played twice as much, or this is played 300 times as much, or this is in roughly the same amount. Even if the numbers don't match per se, you can be like, well, it's a factor of 10. So even sure. if you don't use the numbers quantitatively, which I actually don't specifically, I think qualitatively you can look at something and go, well, 10 times as much, 300 yeah. times as much, a tenth as much.
All right. Have we got DJ's Breaking Bulk yet?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Oh, I have one more, actually, if we're looking at Claws of Gix, just two printings. That's just something I wanted to throw out there because SAC effects are on the rise again with Muldrotha making it real popular to play stuff out of your yard. Zoran Orb's starting to dry up, and Claws of Gix is starting to dry up.
What the heck does Claws of Gix do?
Claws of Gix is a zero-cost artifact. And you pay one
or saga.
Time okay. shifted or saga. Yeah, you pay one colorless mana, you sack a permanent, gain a life. So everyone's like, ooh, this is bad Zurin orb. But it turns out you can sack stuff like hatching plans. So it's it's better.
You're right. It's actually climbed a little bit. It has climbed a really negligible amount in real money, but percentage wise, it's done me more movement than it's had in the past 5 years.
Yep.
Over the past 2 weeks. So
That was a lot. Muldrotha is just it's. And you know what? Everyone that's actually building Muldrotha decks is like, this deck is just so good, and everybody dogpiled me, and it's no fun to play it. So I think this is going to be the boogeyman, and a certain number of people are going to play the boogeyman. There's the people that still got their Nekusar deck, and they got the Judge Foil Wheel of Fortune. They're like, Nekusar, I love being the boogeyman. Bring it on, nerds. But for the most part, people are going to be like, the Muldrotha deck's too good. Like, my
Kaneos
like and Thrasios deck was, like, too good.
It has sort of an endpoint of just getting to be degenerate, and, like, the deck just has a very specific end game where every deck turns out the same, just like the Gitrog Monster did.
Yeah. That's why, like, when I talk about building decks on Gathering Magic, I'm just like, if your deck has Lab Maniac in it, you're going to hate the deck eventually. I just know that because every game is going to end with you winning with Lab Maniac, and you'll be like, oh, this is boring. And maybe not everybody's like me. Some people are like, oh, shit, yeah, Lab Maniac, I win again. My no-stakes local tournament, I get to teabag all my friends at the LGS. And they're like, great, you won on turn three. The rest of us are going to keep playing the game without you. So, I don't know. Maybe you're like that. Who knows? But what I do know is that I get really bored with Lab Maniac decks in EDH.
Yeah, I agree.
They're too linear.
All right, DJ, go ahead, man.
I have a Red Mirage Rare. It might be too easy, but...
Tell him Tor's Edict.
Nope.
No. Oh, it's bulk, huh? Tell him Tor himself.
It's not bulk. People think it's bulk. It is a Red Mirage Rare that I pulled a couple out of bulk recently, and it's... I mean, this might give it away,
Emberwild Caliph?
No. God,
I don't know shit about Mirage, I won't lie.
Elkin's Lair.
Nope, Eric.
That's Visions. That's Visions.
No idea what's in this set. It's the little flower tree thing.
Yeah. It's a palm tree, dude.
Zerlana of the Claw?
Cerulean?
No, but that's a good guess. That's a better guess.
Is it the other one?
It's not.
Zerlon felt like not.
Heaviest of the Scale? So.
Here's another clue. It's $5.
And people think it's bulk? It's a $5 Mirage Red Rare. And it's not Talmtor's Edict.
I actually thought you'd get this, Jason.
I know every... I'm naming every red rare. Is it Kukus?
It's an enchantment.
No, Kukus is Visions.
No, it's a really stupid card.
It's a red enchantment?
Yep.
And it's not Elkin Lair.
It's an enchant world, as a matter of fact.
Oh, No, Wayne's Edge was... Chaos Sphere. No, that was Ice Age.
Cannot block. No, it's
it is
not.
Confirmed. Not Ice Age. Creatures it's got a palm tree on it.
Creatures with flying cannot block. Creatures without flying. Creatures without flying can block creatures with flying. So it topsy turvies the whole evasion game, and it's pretty good in just red greeny stompy decks that you're just like, I'm not playing flyers. I have a weakness to flyers. This turns my weakness into a huge advantage, and I've seen it cast in like Omnath decks or like. Just sort of like Rurik Thar, werewolfy stuff, where you're like, I don't have flying. Now suddenly all my guys are just going to stomp you.
I was thinking Naked Singularity from Ice Age.
Nope. Chaos Sphere, it's $5. It's just like something I pulled out of bulk recently, because if you know nothing about Commander and you're just a modern or standard or competitive spike or whatever.
Yeah, that looks terrible.
Yeah, you flip through this, you're like, what is this garbage?
That's the same thing with Tectonic Instability. I get that in bulk all the time. That card's legit.
Right. I won't lie. I don't know what's rare and what's not in Mirage, so I just look up every Mirage card.
Oh, that's fair.
The fact that this is from a set where when they didn't color code the rarity is just so tilting to someone who wasn't playing then.
Well, plus, sure. Like, some of the effects, like, some of the stuff
you think... This reads like a janky uncommon.
It's like, how is Chaos Lace rare?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing. It's impossible to know what's rare and not rare from back then, because nothing. Force of Will is uncommon.
I remember opening 4th edition decks, and I was like, what's my rare in here? And the guy's like, I think Sinbad is your rare. I don't actually know. I was like, no way, yeah, Sinbad's my rare. That's not even a good card.
That is why old bulk like that will always defeat people who don't just do it regularly or didn't play them, because you just don't even have a concept of what you're looking
for
at.
For sure, but like that's why I pick older cards. Like that's
no, it's good. It's for sure Web. Good. It's a good pick.
Web in 4th edition is rare. Nobody knows that. Because it's garbage. Wow. It would be common in any other set.
Right. Did you said you had another one, DJ?
This one might be a little bit easier, actually. It's a Tempest Blue Rare this time.
Tempest Blue Rare?
Thinking about this one.
Is it Precognition?
Nope.
How much is it?
People think it's bulk? Park King of BioWiz is like 50 cents.
Ligger Domain?
Nope.
No, that was uncommon.
Eric, any guesses?
Is it a creature? What's its card type? Sorcery. Oh, okay. That's an instant. The thing with the sliver.
Capsize.
No, well, capsize is common.
Capsize is a common, which is
take this seriously.
We're proving my point. They all have the same symbol.
But capsize is proper legal.
That's true.
Also, capsize
could have got downshifted.
It's a sorcery. I can only think.
Oh, you said sorcery. I missed that part. All right. I know very few cards from this set.
Jeopardy
clock
ticks over. Time is up. Mana Severance is the card.
No, Mana Severance is an enchantment.
No, sorcery.
Really?
Mana Severance is a sorcery that says search your library for any number of lands, chuck them against the wall, then shuffle your deck.
Yeah, like all this stuff. Like I see the card in my head. I'm like, nah, that it's not that. I can't picture the thing with Hannah with like a sliver wrapped around her. She's like shining a mirror on it. I don't even know what that is. This is the extent to which I know cards I played with when I was 12.
I'm now looking at Mana Severance, and it definitely does look like an enchantment instead of a sorcery. It's just like some land with some lines drawn on it. It does not look like a spell being cast. It looks like a view of something that would be an enchantment.
Yeah, I mean, Card Kingdom BioWiz is 52 cents or something like that, but this is just another card where you skip over it and you're like, oh, this is just some wacky old garbage common that they printed back when they didn't know how to design magic.
Or cards. It could be a mythic rare. That's how much I know about the rarity of sets that don't have a rarity symbol.
Sure.
There were mythic?
There's an advantage to... Corbin doesn't know when mythic rarity was created. Let's skip over that, but... Mana Severance is okay, just...
That was the joke, yes.
Good one.
Thank you.
Mana Severance, pick them out of bulk. You're going to get Tempest bulk. It's not going to have Wastelands in it. It's not going to have, Altar of Dementias in it. It's going to have all those cards picked out, but it will have Mana Severance.
It might have Ghost Town.
That's true. Ghost Town's another good one. That's a really good one in Omnath, too.
Omnath, yeah. That was actually something they discussed on the EDH Rec podcast, not to talk about EDH Rec again.
All right, let's move on. We spent a lot of time on Breaking Bulk this week, but it was good Breaking Bulk.
That's because we don't know what to say about Dominaria yet, because nobody's...
Well, there's not much to say about Dominaria.
Say to Wayfinder, go check that out, I guess.
Let's turn the floor over to you for a minute, man. What do you have going on in Magic lately? What have you been interested in on the finance side of things?
I've actually been playing a lot of Arena.
Oh, really? Okay.
I've been in that beta since it was a beta. I was actually as an alpha. If it takes off, there's going to be some financial implications simply because it's money that leaves the Magic economy and doesn't come back in.
True.
So, you know, as someone like me, if I'm spending, let's say I buy $50 to $100 worth of cards of every set, that's a box of cards I'm not buying in paper. That's, you know, Magic money that I'm not spending on singles or anything else. It takes money away from that economy, and that's money that I actually will never get back. More importantly, it's money that, like, even you guys won't be able to get back, because people spend money on Arena they're not going to have bulk for you guys to pick in 3 to 5 years. So that actually has some financial implications if it takes off.
So the one counterpoint would be if it brings in a bunch of people in the way that Magic Duels or Duels of the Planeswalkers did, it would lead to paper.
And that hopefully is what it does, is it gets people get frustrated with the free-to-play model and right. decide to go build the deck they want to play in paper as opposed to...
What are your criticisms of the... I mean, if you've been playing so long, like, I don't think any of us have played to the extent that you have. What are your criticisms?
I've played quite a bit, but only for the past couple months.
Yeah, so with every wipe that we had... prior to the NDA being lifted, they would give us 72 booster packs of cards. So you had a mm-hmm. good base of cards to build your decks from. With this last wipe, they basically took that away from us. And so it's a grind to build decks. And you get to the point now where I actually have decks where I'm happy to play them. I don't feel like it's a pain to play it, to win, get my daily quest, to get my daily wins. So I don't mind playing it, that part of it, but that's frustrating when someone comes in that has access to extra cards right off the get-go. Some of the streamers got huge bonus packs. And okay.
everybody does that bother you?
Well, it's frustrating in the sense that it's not an equal playing field and that you're not really – the matching algorithm doesn't seem to match me against people that would have the same access to cards that I do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was really frustrating right after the wipe where I would get paired against somebody that had, you know, they would have the red deck and have 3 Hazorettes. So
– do you think – okay. This is good feedback because it's really hard to tell – and this is especially difficult with this because there are a few things at play, right? Obviously, from the marketing side of it, Wizards need to incentivize streamers to play the game, especially when the NDA gets lifted, to get people interested on it, blah, 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 blah. I think we can all understand that from a business standpoint. On the other hand, it's very difficult for me personally, at least, to separate what is good criticism of the economy or the game and what is the Magic community understanding that if they complain enough, they know, and this comes out when you get like the daily arena bitch fest on Reddit, right? Where someone will say, and it gets upvoted, and everyone agrees, this is our opportunity to complain so much to Wizards that they will make this better for us. And none of those people,
yep,
nobody's doing that with an idea of what's, you know, reasonable from a business standpoint. They're just doing it literally from a, I want everything,
yep,
so I'm going to complain as much as possible to get as much as possible. So I imagine if you're Wizards, it's just a nightmare to try to figure out where the line should actually be.
Well, yeah, and Corbin, I know you don't play League of Legends anymore, but there's been a similar thing in League over the past couple years where they recently came out with sort of a loot crate thing, sort of not, but you can slowly accumulate little free boxes and then open them up for free over the course of like your gameplay, or you can just right. drop hard money on them, like the I'm sure you've heard of like the chests and the keys or whatever. But that's product that gives you free skins, which up for the first 4 or 5 years of the game were only available
it was not possible
it was only available through hard actual cash purchases.
RP, yeah.
And then now that's this like random number free item that every month or two you'd get like 2 or 3 skins, maybe depending on how long you played. And then Reddit, just the subreddit, found a way to complain about that to the extent that like the free stuff wasn't good enough. They had to get more free stuff, and there's never any end to like the If you just gave us a couple more keys, I think it'd be more fair. The drop rate for chests after the game, it's not really good enough. I mean, we didn't get any before, but now that we're just only getting a few, I think you could give us a little. But it's just the same.
But the thing is, that doesn't mean. And you know, and one thing is, it's almost in League, it's a little easier because it was not free, and then it is, so it's all upside.
Yes.
But like Arena is trying specifically to emulate a Hearthstone model or an Eternal model or whatever these other digital card games are. So it's really hard to know what feedback you should take seriously if you're Wizards side versus what is just the bitching. Because I do think that it's a real thing.
Yeah, it's a harder to determine the valid criticisms. I agree.
So Eric, where do you think it goes from here? Because the next thing is they're going to wipe again when the game actually releases. So how do you think they can sort of ease those same troubles the next time around?
I think they can give people a sense of pride and accomplishment for opening those packs, right?
EA jokes are like so 3 months ago.
Hey, man. It's relevant right now, and you know it.
So you basically have when the economy wipes and we start over again, someone like me can go in and spend $50 to $100 and be where I want to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
And other people that are going to do the free-to-play and grind, they can get to where they need to be, and you know they're going to complain about it, but hopefully the matchmaking gets a little better where, hey, this guy spent $200 or $100. We want to pair him against somebody who spent $100 or against somebody who has a big advantage in cards.
True.
I had a lot of, you know, I would get paired against gold rank fours and I was still copper rank. And that makes that's a little frustrating in the pairing. So I'd rather be paired you know, I'd rather wait an extra 3 or 4 seconds or, you know, even 10 seconds to get paired against somebody who has the same card level and skill level than what I have, than to get paired against somebody who's been playing the same grinding deck, you know, and just is a turn 3 kill with the red, just the absolute red beatdown deck that exists right now. So
yeah, I mean, theoretically, as more people are added into the beta, that can be addressed. Eric, I don't know if you've played Hearthstone or Eternal or any of those. Do you have a sense of how the arena economy compares to those?
I think it's going to be very similar to the Hearthstone economy, which for Wizards is going to be good because then people are going to spend, like I said, when a new set comes out, they'll spend $50 to $100.
And I think which is what happens in Hearthstone, right? It's the same thing. The only difference is maybe the ranking system separates it a little more.
Which is, to be fair, I don't think I've gotten above rank 10 in Hearthstone, so it's I can get that. I understand that. You're not playing
against... They reset every month as well, so there's... But, like, the... I tried to play Hearthstone Standard, which is the same as Magic Standard, last time, and I basically burned a bunch of dust I'd accumulated from arena runs for the past 2 years to build a deck. Now my deck rotated, and I don't even know if I'd be able to go in there. But from what I understand from Hearthstone Grinders, you do have to basically drop money. You have to spend at least $50 or whatever to get a bunch of the new set to even be able to compete right away. It's really hard to know where Wizards is going to fall in that, since we don't even know what the real money conversion rates are for the Magic Arena economy yet.
No, and the other thing that I'm really concerned about is if I go and spend money in Arena, what happens at rotation?
What do you... because the cards will become worthless, is that what you mean?
Well, if they don't support a format beyond Standard,
right?
The cards become absolutely, and not just worthless, you just can't play them. So
yeah, that's true, because there's a... I wonder if they might... But that's a good piece of feedback that I would hope maybe they listen to, if they're not going to support anything. Basically, when that first Standard rotation happens, which will be, I guess, in October, if the game's out by then, maybe they turn it, the cards you have rotating, into the vault, right? The power up your vault or something, which is basically your duplicates power up the vault and eventually it turns into prizes for you. Maybe they could do something like that. Would that be something that appealed to you?
I guess if you're not losing value completely, would be okay. But that would be my concern. If I spend, you know, say, so we spend $50 a set, which is what people in Hearthstone are spending. If I spend $200 a year on Arena, and I want to be able to get something back when it rotates, you know, and that I think is very important. If it doesn't have, if you don't have that, it's just money that's going to be leaving the Magic economy. It's going in a Wizard's pocket, which is fine, but nobody's getting anything for it once it rotates.
Right. Absolutely. One of the interesting things about the Arena economy that is not necessarily true in Hearthstone is because of the way the vault works, right? In Hearthstone, if you open a card, you dust it, you get the dust value. If you open the same card 2 months later, you dust it, you get the same value out of it, right? In Arena, the first pack you open does nothing for your vault because it's your first copies of all the cards. But the 100th pack you open will be, at that point, say, almost all your 5th and 6th copies. And it'll fill your vault very quickly. And the vault, when it gives rewards, I believe it gives a mythic rare wild card. So it does have an effect that is it scales a little differently than something like Hearthstone, because your vault progress will, you know, basically, which means how close you are to that next mythic rare. You know, your 100th pack you open puts you a lot closer to that than the first pack you open, which is different than Hearthstone. So I'm not sure what that means, if that's good or bad, but that is just the way it is. I'm with you, though. I've enjoyed the game. It's nice to just get on and play. I did before we podcasted. I just spent 5 minutes. I played a casual match in there because it's best of one, and you're in and out in 3-4 minutes.
And you could usually, because your daily, basically after 5 wins in a day, you basically don't get any more gold. And I could usually do that in about an hour. So
you think they should change that? So
no, I think that's fine. I think it's okay. I don't want to have I want it to be where that the diminishing rewards pushes you out of the game, so you're not sitting there playing for hours and hours and hours.
Right, that's true. That's unhealthy. Yeah.
So
yeah, that's the burnout factors there. I always just have to turn in new quests because all I do is play Merfolk. So all right, let's move on to pick of the week. Then I know we're going a little long here. Eric, DJ, which one of you guests would like to go first?
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
I have Iconic Masters Thoughtseize. It's the same art as Lorwyn, and it's half the price.
They're going to meet somewhere in the middle.
And more importantly, that Lorwyn art Thoughtseize has been $50 twice in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Why not pick the one that's bound to go down to meet the other one than the one that's going to go up?
So, no, I really think that I actually changed out my thought seasons to the lower one art, obviously out of Iconic Masters, but it's, you know, I don't think you're going to see another thought season reprint anytime soon, and I like it, so.
Yeah, it's interesting that this is one of the rare cases where the art really does matter. Especially when the art is like plane specific, even, you know?
No.
Also, while we're on the subject, real fast, has Iconic Masters turned out to be okay?
I mean, it's gotten a lot better since it was released, absolutely.
Better than 25 for sure.
There are 15 cards over $10 in the set now. And I can look at the next 10 on the list and pick 8 that are going to be over $10 and.
This is a great time to kind of look at some of that stuff because a lot of that stuff's going to recover.
I mean, the expected value of a box of Iconic Masters is around 117 TCG low, and Masters 25 is 106 TCG low. So Iconic Masters is objectively better than Masters 25, assuming you can get them at the same price.
We expect that. One of the big things is Horizon Canopy jumping in Iconic, and that's one of the ones we said, hey, this card's only expensive because scarcity. It was. Not a lot of copies printed, but then it just 5-color humans came up and it's a 4 of in the deck, which is both somewhat accessible for modern terms and like one of the top 3 best decks.
Well, and Boggles, for the past several Boggles, Boggles, yeah. Or whatever.
So that's Horizon Canopy actually saw more play now than it's ever seen in modern.
Horizon Canopy was absolutely, in terms of like $10 and up cards, it was our best selling card at Hartford.
Yeah,
in terms of like, if we're not counting like Lightning Bolt and like all those like of random course. Staples, Horizon Canopy was our number one card of like, oh, you have Horizon Canopies? How many? Oh, we have enough. Okay, we'll take 4 of them.
And yeah, man, everyone shit on Iconic Masters, but I think it's going to turn out to be just fine.
No, and it's booster boxes are on eBay right now for like $135. So with the coupon, that's like $120.
Yeah,
I don't think it's bad at all. So,
yeah, and a lot of the stuff that's $4 to $5 right now, they're all staples. It just, I think, it came after Modern Masters 2017, which was so good. But and then I guess we got Masters 25, which made Iconic look nice. All right, who wants to go next?
I have a card from the Commander 2014 deck. I don't think it's got a huge price trajectory coming, but it's just a card that I've been consistently selling a lot of and have noticed an upward trend. It is Flamekin Village from the Commander 2014 deck. So
okay.
I was mentioning before about how I've just been like buying a lot of commander decks and then like cracking them and sorting them and reselling them. And Flamekin Village wasn't really in my calculations for the Dreddy deck because like when I bought a bunch, I was like, okay, Wormcoil, Caged Sun, Ruben Medallion, Dreddy himself, Faithless Looting, Soul Ring, Greaves, go. And then everything else is free. And there's two cards. Number one is Rite of the Raging Flame, which is quietly crept up to like $3 just for some insane reason. And then Flamekin Village is another one that's actually, I think, should go in most red commander decks. Assuming
so when it enters the battlefield, you may reveal an elemental, otherwise comes into play tap.
That part's pretty much irrelevant. It's usually a tap land, but
right, and then it gives a creature haste for one.
Yeah, that and like Hanaware Battlements, I think, are two cards that will probably creep up over time, just because they are.
Well, and that's starting to show. Well, people are using Hall of the Bandit Lord right now, but the problem with Hall of the Bandit Lord was that spiked off of Legacy speculation because some dude was running some deck where I think he was using Goblin Welder and Kaldotha Forge Master or some crap like that.
Well, Hall of the Bandit Lord also hurts you the hell of a lot over the course of a game.
Yeah, yeah. It does. And it's so much older.
Yeah, Flamekin Village is just like a cheap, efficient way to like give your, I don't know, like your, what's his name, Heartless Hidetsugu haste, or just like some general commander, just like give it haste. It's going to do a lot of stuff.
All right. That's
and you don't want a land to come into play tapped in Legacy, but you don't give a shit about that need.
I mean, that said, Hall of the Band of Lord is still worth more today than it has been ever before, and it's just steadily trending up.
Yeah.
So,
well, because exactly. that gets you see deck list, you don't see Flamekin Village, you see Hammerware Battlements and Hall of the Bandit Lord in deck lists.
Yeah, and Hall of the Bandit Lord is also a card that is, again, only expensive due to scarcity. It's a Champions of Kamigawa card with no other reprints. Like, yeah. Mikokuro is the analogy here of if that card ever gets a Master's Set reprint, it dies.
Yeah, that is pretty much true. I mean, maybe not one-to-one true with Mikokuro, but very close, yeah.
And so Flamekin Village is just sort of like a, if you are building a red commander deck, or if you plan to build a red commander deck in the future, it's just a nice card to pick up at like $2 right now, because I think it's a card that you might look at 6 months down the road and be like, wow, why is this $4 or $5?
Don't you want Godo to have haste? Don't you want Krenko to have haste?
Yeah, those things are good.
Don't you want to target your Norrin the Wary and have him leaf play? You know, all kind of stuff.
All right, I've got one for you guys from Alliances.
What color is it?
It is colorless, and I told you before the cast, so it probably won't make you guess.
It's
Helm of Obedience. Helm of Obedience, as most people know, is a combo with anything that removes graveyards, because it has a billion words on it, but it's 4 mana, and then you tap it, and target player mills the top card of their library.
Read us the exact Oracle text without reading.
I don't want to. All right. Oracle text or card text?
Both.
It put cards in the graveyard, and if they don't go to the graveyard, then you keep doing it until you run out of library, then they lose.
Yeah. Card is sweet. Been played in a lot of stuff. It went through a spike about 2 years ago in 2016, and then
why 2016? I would because it definitely spiked when they printed.
It spiked on Eternal Masters.
Oh, when they printed whatever. Rest in Peace.
I know. I mean, it spiked with Eternal Masters. Whatever it was,
Eternal Masters was just sort of like what part of the reserve list spikes with. Like, that was the first one.
No, I'm saying it happened way before. Why would it happen 2 years ago?
Because
I don't know. I'm just telling you when it
was when a lot of reserve list cards spiked, because it was just sort of the quote unquote final nail in the coffin of like maybe they'll put reserve list cards in Eternal, and then they didn't, and so crap, our reserve list card spiked.
Fair enough. Regardless, Helm of Obedience is on the reserve list. And unlike a million reserve list cards that are objectively terrible, that are worth a lot of money.
Reparations, anybody?
Yeah. This card is $18, is actually played in Commander, and I believe it is occasionally a legacy card, whatever. But it's starting to climb a little bit again. It's already been bought out once, so the second spike we always talk about is going to be bigger. It's on the reserve list. I mean, I'm not advocating a reserve list buyout. There's plenty of them on TCG players still, but I mean, this is a card that people play. So if you ever want to play this card or just are looking for the spec, this has a lot going for it.
Boom.
That's right. All right, Jason?
I have a card that is from Dragons of Tarkir, and the foil multiplier is 2, which seems non-correct. So I think the foils and the non-foils are in play.
Dragon Lord Kolaghan.
Nope. Unfortunately, this card is the...
it's a worse one in Commander.
Basically, it's actually not that bad.
Dragon Lord Kolaghan? The one that doesn't do anything?
No, it's a big old dragon with haste. It hits
and
him
it
hard.
Gives your guy's haste, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So it yeah, actually, it also has an ability that
we pooped on it, but like I'm noticing Kolaghan is in Dex.
It is worth $3.50 for what it's worth, yeah.
Let's look at Dragon Lord Kolaghan and see how many decks he's in on EDH Rec.
I think it's a sheep.
The point
48. See? It's a staple. So anyway, my card from Dragon's Attack here is Sidisi Undead Vizier, which is basically the most expensive it'll ever be, but I don't think it'll ever get cheaper. It's the most expensive it's ever been, but I don't think it's I think it's also the cheapest it will ever be again.
This tutor is busted.
Yeah. You can be your commander. It can be your commander that's a tutor. So it's like $5. And it's the foils are normal. Like 10, 12?
Foils are foils are 14.
Market price is 13, but okay. Fuck me for using your site. So
the market price is $14.29. I'm literally looking at it, man.
I'm looking at the market price as $12.74, but what do I know? I'm just looking objectively at a screen in real time with my eyes, and you're getting
just
a different number than me.
Just linked TCG player to you.
I'll link TCG player to you back.
Are you looking at the different foils? Like, is one of you looking at like pre-release foil and one of you looking at pack foil?
Man, who knows? Who even cares?
I think that's what you're doing.
That's funny.
Anyway.
I think the pick's good.
I'm going to buy the one from Moose Loot right now. That's $10 because that's our buddy Bernie.
Wait, Jason really did link it to me. I'm impressed.
Yeah. Let's see what he linked to. Think? I just made up a number? Well, I hope nobody double checks. It turns out it's my only job is to reflect reality and tell people data-based reasons to
Jason
buy cards.
Jason was looking at the pre-release foil.
Well, the non-pre-release foil is not on the page I'm looking at, so you can just eat the sweatiest part of my ass.
Oh, man.
Anyway, we're still looking at an under 3x multiplier, are we not? So that's still...
We are, yes. I'm not poo-pooing the pick.
That is non-correct. I think you pick up both the foil and the non-foil. Because, hey, the non-foil's basically the highest it's ever been, but I think it's the lowest it will ever be. Well, if I finally say that right. And if we're looking at a 2x multiplier... I think those will diverge once people start to realize, oh, this is like gone on TCG player and everywhere else. And oh man, this card's really good. It's hard to reprint. It was a mistake to print it in the first place. Probably it's just a real good card. And hey, who doesn't want to be sacking stuff to tutor for cards when you got Muldrotha? So I think all those reasons, you're going to want to pick up Sidisi Undead Vizier. That's a slam dunk.
Yeah, there you go, everybody. All right, I know we went a little long this week. Eric, thanks again for coming on, man. Is there anything else you want to shout out before we head out of here?
No, I think we're good. I enjoyed having time with you guys.
Wait.
Always fun to have you on, man.
Wait.
We got to read at least a couple emails quick.
Oh, what? God.
What? Do you know what an outro is? We were on the part of the show notes to say outro.
Nobody ever respects your show notes.
Read an email. It's fine. Read two. Who cares?
From Josephus DeRochiers.
Oh, we don't need to read this. This guy's not even a real person.
Hey, Brew Crew, I'm headed to GP Vegas in June, and I've never been to Vegas, let alone GP Vegas, because I've never made a good decision in my life before, and I want to start now.
Hey, Joe, why didn't you go to the first GP Vegas?
I wonder why.
Any advice? Must see things in Vegas. Cards to stock up on to dump to vendors. How to get the most out of GP Vegas. Thanks, Joey D. Sent from my Commodore 64.
Ooh, I like Commodore 64. I played that.
I'll tell you when we're there.
Good email.
He's a $20 patron, so
he's a $20 patron, so he gets a personal tour of Las Vegas. That's how it works.
Ooh, there you go.
That's a dangerous precedent to set.
But I'm in. Jason's giving the tours is a great precedent.
He got the only slot, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You heard him. You better go check it out. If there were more $20 spots on Patreon, it's an accident.
No, he got the only you get a tour of Vegas slot. Right. The only one $20 patron gets it. It's first come, first serve.
No, I heard Jason say he was giving every $20 patron a tour.
You got to give one a tour, and DJ's got to give one a tour. I already picked a $20 patron.
Absolutely. If somebody wants to become a $20 patron and I can give them a tour of the craps table, I'm in.
Oh, yeah. That's a good
That's a good call.
You can play craps with us in Vegas if you're a $20 and up patron. That includes you, Eric.
Hey, maybe I'll have to come over.
How generous of Jason.
So.
All right. This last one, just as a head note, we got like 6 emails, so we're going to read the rest of them next week. This one's from David Charlton, TCG Prices, Near Mint versus LP. Hey, Brew Crew, when listing cards for sale on TCG, I've noticed that the lowest Near Mint price is sometimes lower than the lowest LP price, and sometimes I've even the lowest MP price is the most expensive of the three. What gives? I'd chalk this up to blah, 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 I see it over and over again, blah, 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 shipping costs don't seem to matter, blah, blah, blah. Thanks again.
No, this is
good work. There's less movement on damaged cards. People don't want damaged cards, so they sit there for longer, and the people that are doing the race to the bottom... You know, there's more competition in the non-damaged cards, so people are like, "Well, I gotta be the lowest listing."
There could be a really, DJ might know if there's a reason of what it shows you, but I have also noticed this when using the TCG Player app. When someone has a beat up card, I'll mark it down to MP, and then it doesn't change the price, and I'm like, "Okay, well, this is dumb." And then you have to like go even further down to actually get the app to reflect the fact that this card should be worth less. But I've also noticed that. I would assume that when people list stuff, it shows you, like, market price is based off of LP and near mint, not off of MP or lower.
Correct.
So I would assume that when you list a card on TCG Player, it shows you the market price when you choose a price.
Yes, you have 3 options to choose from. Okay, so I can go into my TCG Player store right here, and you can set a listing. There's 3 options to match. You can either match the lowest listing, the current lowest listing that is available right now. So I have free shipping on my store. I'm looking at CDC. I can match the $3.99 with 90-cent shipping, or I can match the last sold listing, which is $5.50 with $0 shipping, or I can match the market price, which is $4.71. So you have a bunch of different options to match, and it's like, actually, it's just like he said in his email. The moderately played price currently, the lowest listing, is $4.92 with 99-cent shipping, which is 20% higher or so than the near mint listing. And again, it's just what these two said. It's mostly because there's less frequently cards being sold at the moderately played price, and so sometimes those ones just tend to linger. And like people who have like moderately played stuff might not update their prices for those cards as frequently. They're fine to just let them sit there, and there's more of a race to undercut the near mint price because those are the most frequently appearing copies.
Would we expect that to be different than on cards that are rising? Right, like if the idea of if your theory holds because the prices are going racing to the bottom, but what if the price is going up? Shouldn't it not be that? I don't know. I mean, I don't actually know the answer to this question because I've noticed it as well, and it's actually kind of annoying when I'm pricing stuff up.
Well, when stuff comes into the store, I usually just like use the TCG website on my laptop. I don't usually use like the phone app.
Yeah.
Just so I can take that into account. But like normally it's just the people don't sell those copies as frequently. And the other part of it is if let's just say there's a $5 CDC cheapest on the market, and then the MP one is $6, the cheapest MP listing is $6. If you want your MP copy to sell, you're gonna list it lower than the current near mint one, so then that one's gonna sell. And then that just removes that quote-unquote lower copy entirely. So,
but it would lower the market price of it, though.
Not if it's an MP copy.
Okay. So are we thinking then that Mark...
Well, it would lower the market price. You're right.
Let's figure it out. Let me look at the app right now.
Because the market price on CDC is $4.71, and the cheapest listing is $5.
I got a Karn right here. Let's find out. All right. Karn Liberated, Modern Masters 2015... okay, it's obviously not going to update very fast. All right, let's see if I change it to moderately played. No, it still lists a market price for moderately played, so.
I can't speak for the app because I don't, number one, I don't work on it. Number two, I don't use it very much. I just use the TCG website instead, so.
But it doesn't change the fact that the prices for the played copies are more than the.
Right, and that's because the played copies that are lower than the near mint copies are the ones that are priced aggressively to sell, and then those ones get eaten up.
Which should lower the market price.
Not if it's an MP or HP copy.
The market price has, like, I'm telling you, there is a market price for MP copies as well. It's not just medium.
Then why isn't the app showing it?
it, I mean, the app's being slow right now and not loading, but it does show you a different price that is not the median price.
Right. So, like, the median, the market price for MP is 502, which just basically means that those copies don't sell as frequently.
Okay. I think the answer is we don't have a great answer here. derive what value you can from the things we've said. Obviously, in a great show of the TCG Player app, it won't even load a price for this card I'm trying to scan right now.
Also, so the email there says, P.S. Thanks, Jason, for scooping to me in the A25 PPTQ. You got beers earlier, and I got my GP buy.
In this case, though,
I would never do something nice like that for this. That person's
I'm just
mistaken.
Wait, Jason, you played Magic?
I.
You played a game of Magic that didn't involve 99 cards?
I mean, I clearly lost the match. I think I won, but scooped any. Or I didn't want to play the match, so I just left early or something. I don't know.
And there you go. All right, anything else we need to say before we get out of here this week, guys?
We will read the rest of these emails next week.
There you go.
At least
all
the
right.
ones the ones from the $10 not patrons will read. The rest probably not.
Wow.
That's
harsh.
That's how the system
That's how
works
it is, man.
It's how it they don't
This is capitalistic, so
they don't think it'd be like it is, but it do.
It's pay to play, baby. Now why don't you pay us?
I'm letting proof email. Of it.
Eric, thanks again for coming on, man.
No problem.
Everybody
Appreciate
else,
the invite.
Yeah, this is Brainstorm Brewery, and we'll see you all next week with hopefully a little more relevant Dominaria information to discuss. Thanks for listening.